Bet the Board in conjunction with NASCAR presents Stay Green. Stay Green is your first stop for all the metrics, matchups, and money-making opportunities at the track each race week. This is Stay Green, the NASCAR betting podcast. Here are your hosts, Todd Furman and racing analyst Chris Wormy.
Welcome into the Stay Green podcast, a Bet the Board production in conjunction with NASCAR. One more playoff race down, one more playoff race won by a non-playoff driver. I'm your host, Todd Furman, joined as always by racing analyst and betting colleague, the one, the only, Chris Wormy. And Wormser, a hell of a race we saw at Texas. Felt like it took 36 hours to ultimately get resolved, but a hat tip of the Texas style to the 8 car and Tyler Reddick grabbing his third victory at the Cup Series.
Yeah, he seemed to be the only leader late in the race that didn't have issues. So again, like we had talked about last week, the battle of attrition, and Tyler Reddick won, and I'm happy for him. He's had speed this year. He's had a couple races taken away from him. So to see him get to victory lane, I thought that was great.
A record 36 lead changes, a record 16 caution periods that included a 56-minute red flag for rain that I'm still not quite sure where it actually was on the track. I obviously trust NASCAR and the teams. Just after Ryan Blaney claimed the Stage 2 victory. For those folks new to the Stay Green podcast, we divide this thing up. Stage 1 is all about what we saw and what we learned from the previous race. In this case, Texas, 500 miles, 334 laps. Stage 2, what we can use going forward to apply through a gambling lens. This week we'll focus on some of the updated playoff odds and odds to win the championship. And of course, this week, the challenge that is Talladega and what kind of actionable elements we may or may not have there. Full disclosure, Wormser, Texas, not the best race for me and my betting bankroll. Had a couple head-to-heads, beat the market by significant margins, but it's tough to win races when Alex Bowman goes 6 laps down pretty early on in the race, Bubba Wallace loses his power steering, and the best bet that we offered up for our loyal listeners on Sunday, Martin Truex Jr. out front in clean air, and that wasn't enough for him to get the best of the one car.
I thought we were sitting good on that particular bet. Late in the race, I think he took the lead with, 88 laps to go or something. And, arguably one of the fastest cars throughout, even running in the mid pack, he was making passes at a place where it was tough to pass. I felt good. I thought if he could get to clean air, that he would be able to set sail. And I was wrong.
He did set sail. He just didn't set sail and ride off into the sunset.
Yeah, you're right. So it was, one of those things where Chase Elliott was the first car we saw blow a tire when leading. And I thought at first that was an anomaly. And then when Kevin Harvick did it, I was like, oh boy, is this going to be an ongoing theme for the rest of the race, as speeds picked up? And yes, then Truex did it again. I kind of thought that it might happen maybe later in the race to Reddick. I didn't know what to think. At this point, I had no dogs left in the fight and was just kind of watching anxiously, not sure what was going to happen. Like, I've never been so unsure of a race at a mile and a half track that's not a restrictor plate track, where I'm like, I had no idea what was going to happen. I mean, there were guys at like in 15th place that with like 20 to go, I thought had a chance at winning the race somehow. I didn't know how, but throw a couple cautions and people taking tires, anything could have happened. So, but I'm happy that Reddick, he had a good speed in his car the last quarter of that race, and I was happy he was able to get it done.
A pretty wild race all the way around, and of course with Tyler Reddick winning, you don't have anybody securing a free pass into the round of 8, so the drama is heightened even more than it already was. Unfortunately for those of us holding Christopher Bell to win the championship tickets, the mountain for him to climb got a little bit steeper. We'll get to his updated price a little bit later in the show. You mentioned Martin Truex struggling when he was in clean air, Chase Elliott, Kevin Harvick, the list goes on and on. You try and figure this out in terms of what's taken place over the last couple weeks. We love racing for the parity and some of the challenge that comes into handicapping. How difficult has this been for you on a race-to-race basis when you look to try and build your portfolio, whether it's outrights, whether it's live bets, whether it's head-to-head matchups? Have you found yourself getting more conservative given some of the uncertainty and the unpredictable nature that we've experienced over the last couple of playoff races?
Absolutely, especially pre-race betting. So, you know, if you're looking to, and here's the difference for, you and I, I'm certainly able to get more money down on pre-race matchups and outrights. Yes, I do get a chance live to get some, you know, search for value or find some investments for me myself there. But ultimately, before the race and is when we can actually get down. And man, it's been unknown. It's almost like as soon as the playoffs started, there's just been this struggle for consistency or predictability. I mean, that it started to happen right at, I would say, Daytona. I thought that Watkins Glen had kind of a funky finish, but we were at Richmond and that seemed normal. There weren't really tire issues and it played out like a normal race. And then since then, we have just seen issues at Darlington, then Kansas, and now Bristol and Texas. So, well, at least we're heading into Talladega, you know, something where, you know, there's no chaos at all.
No, I was going to say, you know what? The way that this postseason has gone from a wagering perspective, Talladega may end up being the most predictable. So that's kind of what I've accepted come Sunday afternoon when they dropped the green flag that we're going to go through. Oh, we knew those were going to be the top five cars. This is what we forecasted beforehand. And that'll follow more of a blueprint than what we've seen at some of the intermediate and short tracks so far.
Well, and the other thing, too, is I always tell myself, okay, there's some unpredictability in the sport. We're having issues with tires. And, okay, how can I make money from it? And it's a little hard to do that right now. I mean, we went from zero non-playoff drivers winning races to them winning the last four. And we could see an ongoing theme with that, just because if you're concerned about tires, you could take the Chad Knaus, Jimmy Johnson rule in the playoffs and, hey, every time there's a caution, if you have tires, it's four tires and fuel. And you saw some teams do that, and they were able to kind of, you know, battle that race or that track and, you know, come out with a finish on the lead lap with some points and move on to Talladega, which we thought was going to be, you know, obviously the big wild card. But at this point, Texas was just as big a wild card as Talladega.
Yeah, and we say that obviously facetiously the Talladega is going to be predictable. We know there's going to be a big wreck that's going to collect a number of drivers, playoff drivers and otherwise. There are folks who've seen their priorities shift. You know, Christopher Bell, we'll get to some of his comments, have said we came into this round of the postseason with a philosophy that we thought we were going to be able to execute. It's now significantly different given the way they ran at Texas, and suddenly you have drivers that are real close to the cut line or on the right side of it, and a Chase Briscoe and an Austin Cindric who may not need to go for that Hail Mary or feel they have to be as aggressive going forward as some of the other drivers that are there. Now, one driver whose situation changed quite a bit, not necessarily because what unfolded at the track on Sunday, but NASCAR making a decision to dock him playoff points, was William Byron. For those folks that didn't watch the race on Sunday, there was a bit of a dust-up under yellow between William Byron and Denny Hamlin. A lot of back and forth, great dialogue going on social media. If you don't follow Denny Hamlin, I encourage all of you guys, if you're NASCAR fans, to do so. But suddenly, 25 playoff points, and William Byron goes from being inside the top eight to now having a little bit of work to do.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing to look at with William Byron's comments is he did say it was really hard contact. And I think this is it. So I believe William Byron, and you know, I don't have any reason not to believe him. He's been a pretty straight shooter his entire career in NASCAR. And so I believe him when he said it was really hard contact, but my eyeballs told me something else. It just looked like he hit the wall. This could be a product of these rigid cars. And, you know, I would say most drivers have said that their hardest hits that they've had this year have the hardest hits that they've had in their careers have come this year. And I think that that might be what happened to William Byron here, because it didn't look that bad. But I also believe him that it was hard contact. And so maybe he thought that Denny was racing him egregiously. And that's what Denny's racing hard, and it, like I said, it didn't look bad. And here's the deal: you cannot, under any circumstances, once that yellow comes out, you can't start wrecking guys. I think that everyone was saying, wow, this was such a big penalty for the 24 team. And it's like, yeah, it was. But you know what he's not going to do again is wreck somebody under caution. So as much as bad as this hurt him in the playoffs, I also don't think you'll see any driver take issue with him or take issue with another driver under caution. That being said, I also believe when he said he didn't want to spin Denny. So he didn't hit him that hard, and I don't know. It's just a weird situation, but you can't be aggressive under caution. I've never been a fan of that, so I'm okay with the penalty, and I don't think it'll happen again.
My take on all of this is that, hey, look, these drivers are handsomely compensated. Monetary fines don't do nearly as much damage as docking them playoff points or trying to figure out where it hurts them the most. I mean, we saw Ty Gibbs obviously get a financial fine and lose some owner's points as well. So it doesn't hurt him as much as he's not looking to try and secure passage to the next round of the playoffs for an incident on pit road with Ty Dillon. I give NASCAR credit. I mean, would I have liked to see it happen in real time? Yes, you probably, if you know they were able to try and monitor that, you could have seen something unfold on the track. You maybe send William Byron to the back of the lead lap. But I think the way that they go about it was, hey, we missed it. You can believe them one way or another, but they ruled with an iron fist. And to your point, it serves as the ultimate deterrent for other drivers who are trying to take notice. Now, the question that I have in all of this that I think Denny Hamlin broached, and I'm going to paraphrase it or butcher it in some capacity, what happens in this situation if it's a non-playoff driver that takes out a playoff driver who ultimately has his chances hurt to advance to the next round? I'm not sure what the right answer, so I throw it out there partly as a rhetorical, but I'm always curious to get your take on some of the bigger overarching issues.
I don't think you would see that. That would be, I think that those drivers, they know how hard it is to win a race, let alone a championship. And I find it hard to believe that a retaliation from a non-playoff guy would ever retaliate in that manner. Maybe. I mean, this year, maybe. But I think, I mean, yeah, if there's a year that it was going to happen, I would say this year. And I'm sure that there's going to be people that point out in the past when it's happened. And, you know, I hope that if someone takes out a playoff driver and they're a non-playoff guy, I hope that this is just good, honest racing and not a payback in any manner. You know, I know Hamlin now has a long list of drivers that he owes. And to be honest, I think Hamlin's biggest fans need to be Ross and Byron if they're going to stay in the playoffs. As long as Hamlin has speed, continues to advance, I don't see him taking an exception with one of those IOUs until he's out. Now, what will happen if Denny Hamlin does not make it to the next round? He's still going to try to win races. But if he ever goes a lap down or, you know, has an issue and he's out of the race, I think he'll just start picking off the guys that he owes. And the 24 and the 1 are on there.
It's interesting, though. It's interesting, though, because I think Denny obviously wants to race as hard and aggressively as possible. He knows his opportunities to win a championship. The one thing he's missing from his Cup Series resume is that elusive championship. But he also has to keep in mind that he's a team owner. And if NASCAR is going to hand out a 25-point penalty to William Byron, what kind of more punitive measures can they take for Denny Hamlin, the race car driver, knowing that this establishes a very dangerous precedent if he were to go that far, knowing he's not just a driver, but he owns a race team as well that's operating the top flight?
Well, Todd, that is an amazing point you brought up, and it's not on these show notes that we have, so I honestly don't know. I haven't even thought about that.
Well, you make it sound like we have a producer for these show notes. It's my musings as much as anything else. I give you a couple hours. Hey, look, here are the things I think we should hit on and hope you come in readily prepared. Every now and again, if I don't work, you know, a little bit outside and drive outside the lane, this would be too easy and too formulaic, and it wouldn't be as ad hoc as we try and go.
Well, I just think that's a good point. What happens if Denny Hamlin is racing for 23XI at some point in the future and something like this happens? I don't know.
It's hard to know. It's just things to think about. I mean, obviously we watch things as betters first and foremost, but we're still race fans. We love the sport. We want to see it continue to grow in popularity, and we want to see the product get more and more competitive. I think we've both loved the parity and the fact you don't know who's going to win a race every single Sunday. You would just like to see it decided by racing ability on the track. And I guess my long-winded way to come all the way back full circle as I'll wave the white flag with
I actually want to address this Hamlin thing. Let's think about this. If we want to make money, let's say that Hamlin doesn't, you know, make it to the next round for whatever reason. Anything can happen. I do think he will, but who knows? If all of a sudden, if that happens, I'm not in the 24 and the 1 are still advanced. They're in the 8. I'm not going to take them in any matchups because it's coming. It's just a matter of time. So I think when it comes to the betting perspective on, hey, how can I make money from this, or, you know, maybe avoid losing money, I would say I would avoid the 24 and the 1 when Hamlin is not in the playoffs anymore.
And you know what? I think you have to avoid the 11, because if you think the 11 is going to do something aggressive on track, I think NASCAR has to have in the back of their mind, look, we can't tolerate this kind of behavior if it were to happen. And it's the same thing that we've talked about in this podcast. And you actually led me where I wanted to go with one to go, because this is a gambling podcast first and foremost. We have to think about it from the gambling ramifications and implications that'll unfold here. I mean, you and I have said to each other, look, I'm not betting Kyle Busch in any head-to-head matchups given the way he's running. If you want to take a shot with him because his price gets out of whack in the outright market, so be it. But he's either a driver you're betting against in head-to-heads or you're staying away completely. And I'll put those drivers in a bucket the same way, because I think we all have to look about it and look at it the same way when we talk about betting, whether it's NASCAR or any other sport out there. If you can eliminate variables and try and take them out of the equation, you have to do so to maximize the upside and the opportunity in betting markets. And I think these are storylines that'll bear watching, not just from an on-track product, but what can take place the betting window on top of it.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. I mean, you have to look at everything through a betting lens, and we have to take into account variance. And right now there's a ton in this sport. And when that happens, sometimes you have to, I kind of abandon my, hey, I'm very sure about this, and place large, take it, basically bet less and maybe bet more guys instead of saying, hey, these are the three or four guys that really seem to dominate, or I think that they're, you know, based on practice and their history, they're going to be really good. It's not that. Everything has this, well, this is what I think, but who knows what happens to these tires after 30 laps. And you just got to be completely honest and say, sometimes there's just not an edge. Let's just grab our popcorn and watch the race.
Yeah, and that's the other thing too. When you look at all of these dominoes, we typically try and shy away from laying massive price tags, knowing that there's such a slim margin between a lot of these cars. If anything, now you're not going to find me racing to the window to lay upwards of $1.50 or $1.60, even if that price is going to $2, just because I don't want to create that kind of exposure and think that my edge is going to be north of 60%, no matter how we model it, no matter what we see at practice or what we take away from some of the racing quotes. So we'll officially wave the green, white checkered flag on stage one. I'll encourage you guys to follow Chris on Twitter. That's at Chris Wermy, ChrisWerme. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there. Most importantly, follow the podcast at Bet the Board Pod. And stage two, Worm, we've kind of done this, and it'll probably be the format that we keep going forward, where we look to provide a playoff reset of sorts. And some interesting news and notes: only 6 of the remaining 12 playoff drivers have won races at the two remaining tracks in the second round, Talladega and the Charlotte Roval. Among the 6, Joey Logano has the best win record in Talladega, having finished first there in 2015, 16, and 18. Other Talladega winners in the group include Ryan Blaney twice, Denny Hamlin twice, Chase Elliott once, and Ross Chastain earlier this year. The Charlotte Roval we know is relatively new, and of course, but Chase Elliott already owns 2 wins there. Ryan Blaney and Kyle Larson have 1 at the Roval. The reason I bring all of that up is when you're trying to assess the market where it is now, and you're looking to identify prices that are out there on drivers, knowing the tracks that are coming up is such a key component, not just this coming Saturday or Sunday, but what you have left before you get to the elimination race. Factoring all of that in, when you begin to look at some of the prices widely available, is there a particular driver that you would gravitate towards? Is there a driver that you would stay away from completely? And we can get into some of the individual drivers themselves.
There's a couple things here that, you know, I want to talk about. Number one would be, you know, Austin Cindric, mainly because, you know, I think he'll be good at the Roval, and I think he'll be good at Talladega. Now, he had a a good run kind of spoiled at Texas, unfortunately. But you know, he's sitting at 50-1. But I have to be very realistic. Can he get to Phoenix? And I don't think that answer is yes. You know, to get through Vegas, Homestead, and Martinsville, those are not going to be tracks that favor that two car. But I do find it interesting if we did get to the Roval, he could eat up a spot of a very, you know, of a driver that maybe could do some damage there. So I think we have to look at, you know, Austin Cindric from that perspective, you know, and also on the flip side of that, Alex Bowman. Alex is one of those guys where, you know, he had a chance to win at COTA earlier this year. So he's not a bad road course racer. He's also 50-1. And he's a guy that obviously can win at Vegas. Homestead is probably an average track for him. And obviously Martinsville is a good track. So I know he's sitting out of the playoffs at this point, or out of the moving on. But man, when you look at some of the tracks and maybe he gets a fluky win, or you just start to see guys have issues, which, by the way, can happen this weekend. And what if we... Let's just throw in rain at the Roval. Do we want to do that? I mean, it would be very fitting.
I mean, hey, the way the playoffs have gone so far, I mean, rain would be the perfect icing on the cake, the cherry on top, whatever cliche analogy you want to try and use to outline it.
Yeah, I wouldn't shock me. Could you imagine Texas Talladega and then the Roval in the rain? Good luck. I mean, what a tough round of the playoffs. You know, I think when it comes to realistic, you have to look at Chris Bell and William Byron. Obviously, there's not going to be a ton of value on the guys at the top. You're looking at Chase and Denny and Larson, you know, anywhere from 3 to 6 to 1-ish. But, you know, you start to get into that Chris Bell and William Byron. I mean, if he can go out there and score stage points in the first and second stage at Talladega, well, he's right back in this thing. And we all know that he's capable. The same with William Byron. Daniel Suarez is one of those guys where he could be good at well, obviously at Talladega, anything can happen. Then you look at Charlotte. He's obviously good at road courses. Where I think he'll struggle would be much like Cindric will be Vegas, Homestead, and Martinsville. That's where I think there's a big difference, and obviously a big difference in price as well, where Byron's 16, Bell's 16, and you see Suarez out to 40. That's not because of the next two races. That's because of the round of eight. So if I were to look at investing anywhere, it would be Bell and Byron, just because I think that they have a real shot at winning at Vegas, Homestead, or Martinsville. Obviously,
if I could get you 20-5 to 1 on Bell, would that be something you'd be interested in?
I already have some at 22. Yeah, I just here's the thing. I have to, since Bell's my favorite driver, all of a sudden I have to fight bias with him. I don't want to get too involved, but yeah. I don't know. He could wreck again at Talladega, and then he has to win at Charlotte. And I don't think he will win at Charlotte. So I'm going to say no. But if he somehow gets through, if he scores some points and kind of gets in the mix at Talladega, I think he does move on. If he finds trouble at Talladega, it's probably the end of his season.
Well, I mean, you mentioned some of the favorites, and we may as well start there with one of the drivers. I mean, Chase Elliott's price has never drifted north of 4-1, and his comments leading into Talladega, it's not a great position to be in for sure, but it is what it is now. I hate it for our number 9 Napa Auto Parts Chevrolet team. We were actually decent here for once. This is in regards to Texas.
True.
And that was nice while it lasted. We'll go to Talladega and try to survive over there, get a win next week, and go on down the road, a.k.a. just don't get caught up in the big win at Dega. Give yourself an opportunity to win at the Roval. He sits 26 points behind Joey Logano right now, 4 points clear of the cut line. He's never had a top 5 finish in 6 fall Talladega starts, with just 1 top 10 at that. Finishes well outside the top 10, not worth rattling off there. But, I mean, are any of these favorites? I mean, we talk about looking for long shots and identifying value and opportunity. Is there a favorite that you think, hey, look, this is the best price I'm going to be able to get? Or are we fully cognizant, and regardless of how things go, I'm going to be able to get a better number on Chase Elliott. I'm going to be able to get a better number on Denny Hamlin, Joey Logano, Kyle Larson, and even Ryan Blaney, to that matter. We've beaten up the Ross Chastain storyline till we're blue in the face. If you're grabbing 8.5 to 1 now, you're doing a disservice to your bankroll when you could have had 50-1 way back when. But as far as the favorites, do you think this is a time to pounce, or we're going to get those numbers to drift out at some point from here until we get to Phoenix?
I think if you're looking at the favorites, so let's just say Chase, Denny, Larson, Logano are kind of in that rate of between 3 and 6 to 1. I would say Logano has the most value, right? He's 37 points to the good, and he's obviously great almost everywhere. You know, he's won the championship at Miami. He's obviously good at Martinsville. I'm pretty sure he's won at Vegas, and the Penske's have been good there in the past. Charlotte, I would say at the Roval, he's going to be serviceable, and you know that that 22 can go out there and win at Phoenix. So it, at 6-1, man, it's just something about Logano is just kind of around. Same thing at Texas, you know, sure enough with, you know, 50 to go, he's settled into second place and, you know, locking some good points for that team. So if I were looking at the favorites, I would say the last one I'd want to be looking at is that 9 team. Not only they've taken a little bit of hit in points, but they just haven't shown speed that you need to win races. And yes, he's been getting those finishes, but this is the first time where a finish has kind of caught up to him, and now he needs speed, and that's where that team has struggled a little bit. So I would say Logano is who I'm buying, and then I'd be selling Chase Elliott at those current prices.
I feel like we've talked about Chase kind of having that horseshoe there with the improbable finishes despite not having speed during the middle of the season. And this will be a guy that will watch his numbers drift out. He'll go into Martinsville on the wrong side of the cut line, and you'll end up getting a better price on him to win everything there because yep. He'll do what he always does. Saves his best for last and puts it all together when it matters the most. But it's always interesting because NASCAR is such a unique element to the postseason that you typically, if you wait and you're patient, you don't have to gravitate towards some of these favorites because they find themselves on the wrong side of the cut line with only two races to go in the season, you're going to get a significantly better price tag with them. So buyer beware. There's no reason to try and run over men, women, and children and bet some of these guys. I do want to ask you about one final driver, and it's one that's shown speed, not named Joey Logano, but his teammate in Ryan Blaney. He still has yet to have a win so far this season, but he's been consistently good and can win at each of the next two tracks. I mean, a fourth place run and 29 laps led on Sunday kept him relevant. He's been the one that I've had a real hard time trying to figure out not only how to handicap him in matchups, but to look at what realistic expectations are and if we could be talking about the 12 winning a championship despite not winning a race until potentially getting to Phoenix.
Yeah, this is looking like Newman back a few years ago when he didn't win a race and he found himself in the championship four. The big difference is Blaney actually has a chance at winning the final race. Newman had zero chance at winning at Homestead. So I think if you find Blaney in the final four, I think Blaney, if Blaney gets to the final four, he's going to be one of the favorites because he qualifies well at Phoenix. And when he's out front, he's great. The thing is, if you look at these championship races, Elliott started at the rear 2 years ago and was leading in, I don't know, I swear I sneezed and I looked up and all of a sudden he was leading. And then Larson had to deal with some issues on pit road and had to work his way back up. I just haven't seen that out of that 12 camp, that ability to go from the back to the front. And this is, you know, I feel like a broken record talking about it. However, if he gets out there and runs a clean race, he could set sail and lead a ton of laps at Phoenix and it will be like, well, there was no doubt who the best car was today. I do think it'll take a win at Phoenix, whereas Homestead maybe had a little bit more variance, even though it didn't. I thought it could have. So I do like the 12 team, but they have a long ways to go before I'm going to the window with a championship ticket for him.
If I'm waving the white flag with one to go on stage two before we get to how you can follow all of the on-track activities this weekend, anything else that we left out in our playoff discussion that you definitely want to add into the mix?
Man, I've never been so unsure, if that makes sense. You know, last year at this time, we're like, well, if Larson and everybody else, you know, where is he going to have an issue? And, you know, is someone going to be able to challenge him? This year, if you were to tell me that Logano has issues over the next two races and doesn't advance, I'd go, huh, well, that seems about right. If you were to tell me that Austin Cindric has a great finish at, you know, Talladega and then wins at the Roval, I'd go, oh, yeah, that seems about right. If you were to tell me that Alex Bowman wins the next two races, I'd go, oh, that seems about right. Like, nothing would shock me, and it's been a long time in NASCAR that I've felt that way. So it, at the same time where it's really hard to predict from a, you know, the betting angle, it's going to be exciting. Like I usually don't tune in to these restrictor plate races, but I think this year I have to, just because of all the storylines that it's, that's going on right now in the playoffs. So I'm excited, even though my wallet might not be.
Are we able to call them restrictor plate races, or do we have to call it the Super Speedway race package? I'm not quite sure what the edict and the terminology we're using going forward on these things.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure everyone knew what I meant.
Either way, the way to try and take in all of this great on-track activity, you have not one, not two, but all three series headed down to Talladega this weekend. And on Friday, September 30th, today, the high weather forecast, because I am going to play meteorologist with Hurricane Ian wreaking havoc on the sports calendar. High of 77. There is obviously a possibility that the hurricane could impact some of the on-track activities and the race times. But Truck Series qualifying scheduled to go at 3:30 Eastern. You can see that on FS1. And Xfinity Series qualifying on Friday night, 5:30 Eastern. You can see that on USA Network. When you look at Saturday, should be a little bit overcast, potential for heavy rainfall. We'll keep our fingers crossed that Mother Nature allows us to go racing. At 10:30 a.m. Eastern to noon, Cup Series qualifying on the NBC Sports app. You can also listen on the Motor Racing Network as well. 12:30 p.m., the Truck Series race, 94 laps, 250 miles, FS1. And then at 4 p.m. on Saturday, we'll see the dropping of the green flag in the Xfinity Series race, 113 laps, 300 miles. You can check that out on USA Network. Last and obviously certainly not least, Sunday afternoon, 2 p.m. Central or 2 p.m. Eastern time, the Cup Series race. 188 laps of chaos, 500 miles on the steep banks of Talladega. We know that this track will not disappoint. There will be plenty of excitement to watch. And when you look at Talladega, hey, look, it's a super speedway. It's one of the fastest tracks on the circuit. 2.5 miles. We know it's notorious for the big one, collecting not one, not two, but maybe 15 to 18 cars at a moment's notice. When you look at how history has unfolded here, Bubba Wallace won in last October. A rain-shortened race is the only time to win and the win in advance format. We've seen a non-playoff driver win at Talladega going back to 2014. So little to say, we could set a precedent again this weekend. The last four Dega winners were actually playoff drivers, not named Bubba Wallace, that found themselves below the cut line. The four below the cut line that would apply to this weekend: Austin Cindric, who's 7 below, William Byron now 8 below with the penalty we mentioned at the top, Christopher Bell 25 below, and Alex Bowman 1 point behind him at 26. The overarching question I have: do we think we're going to see drivers that are in good positions race for points? I mean, there's no empirical data that says sitting back allows you to get through this race unscathed.
I honestly have no idea. Out front, I used to think was safe, and then or way back, like half a straightaway back, I thought was safe. But the way that these cars line up and kind of the knife's edge that they're on when it comes to snapping loose, I don't know that there's a safe place anywhere in Talladega. I think you actually have to see, you're going to see some guys hang back. I think that's the only like surefire way to minimize your risk in this race. But I mean, that could change. Who knows? I don't know. Maybe someone could go out there and lead a bunch of laps. I just think that when it comes to these stage finishes, those points are so important. They're going to be racing like it's the end of the race, which is exactly what we want. We just want to have stable race cars when we're doing it, because the last thing we want is a leader to get turned, and the next thing you know, he's collecting 10 or 12 cars, including playoff drivers.
And we have seen these super speedway races provide that level of excitement. We haven't had any issues with tires or anything mechanically related. Obviously, there's plenty of chaos, whether we're at Daytona, whether we're at Talladega, or now Atlanta with a similar style race package. So it opens up endless possibilities. And when you look at some recent track history, again, take some of this with a grain of salt. I don't think it's necessarily predictive of what we're going to see unfold. I mean, RFK Racing comes in with arguably the best form of any race team going right now. Let's 309 laps over the last two races, more than the team had led in the prior 105 races combined. You look at Brad Kay, 6 career wins here. No other active driver has 3. Hasn't won a cup race since scoring a victory in a Team Penske Ford back in April 2021 at Talladega. I mean, Brad's got to be considered a legitimate threat. I mean, he showed speed last weekend. I faded him in a head-to-head matchup against Bubba Wallace because I thought minus $1.50 was too expensive. Joke was on me. Brad finishes inside the top 10. He wins the pole. And the 6, you can see the confidence. In the interview he did with Parker Klingerman, he's starting to figure out exactly what this team is, and I'm not going to rule him out, nor will I rule out his teammate Chris Buescher at 20-1 this weekend.
I like both of those guys, and it's kind of shocking if you were to think back to Fontana and that you'd say RFK Racing has kind of been the most consistent team when it comes to finishes. And you would tell me that, you know, Chris Buescher would go out there and win at Bristol Night Race after Brad blew a tire because he was leading. It, like, I would have been shocked. So for, you know, this is exactly why Brad Keselowski was so valuable to Roush Fenway Racing. I mean, that he's taken a team that wasn't competitive and now they're winning races and they've arguably become the most consistent team in the sport. So that's exactly what someone like Kyle Busch will bring to RCR next year. And hats off to that team. I'm, you know, I've never been like a huge Brad fan or a Buescher fan or just a Fenway fan or Roush fan in general, but this is kind of cool to see. And yes, Brad K can certainly win here. He's as good as they come at this track, and it'll be exciting to see if he can mix it up. He's got nothing to lose, so I certainly anticipate him being there.
Well, that's the whole thing. I mean, these non-playoff drivers can go out there and race aggressively for the win. I think that's what's most fascinating about this track and what we have in the playoff format. If they blow a tire, hey, it's not that big a deal. We've seen some heartbreaking interviews with Martin Truex because we know the level of frustration, but he's not out there racing for points. You want a fast race car. You want to go out there and try and give yourself an opportunity to win the race. And when you look at some of the other favorites, and I use that term facetiously here, I mean, Kyle Larson, Ross Chastain, Joey Logano, I mean, all of these drivers pretty much priced at 12-1. I'm not sure I'm running to bet any of these guys. Yes, they have to win. Yes, some of them have good track history here, but I think they'd be perfectly content if they were able to pick up stage points in the first stage, the second stage, and finish somewhere 6th to 9th rather than going for broke and finishing outside the top 20.
Oh, totally. You know, it's going to be interesting to see if someone like Logano even goes for stage points. Like, does he want to risk that? I feel like you might see someone like Logano just kind of hang around way back and then see how many guys are sitting on the lead lap with 30 to go. I think how many drivers are on the lead lap is a really important kind of statistic for a lot of these teams that are still in it. And I mean on the lead lap and in the playoffs. Because if you look at Daytona, only 10 drivers finished on the lead lap. Now, if there's only 10 drivers on the lead lap, and it's the final lap of the race, well, you can go ahead and be aggressive, even if you're Chris Bell, because you know at worst, you're going to finish 10th. So I think that, you know, most of these guys are going to sit back and just see how the race unfolds and play defense for the most part. Now, I don't know how if Chastain even has that in his veins. Like, can Chastain even hang back? I know that Larson can do it. I don't. Maybe Logano.
I mean, Ross has a little bit of a cushion, to be completely honest here. He does not want to wreck in the first stage and ruin his opportunities there. But if you look at the standings, it's not a big cushion. But I think the risk reward for Joey Logano and Ross Chastain, maybe more so than any of the other guys in the playoff field. Hey, go for broke. If you think you have a legitimate chance to win the race, go out there and win it so you don't have to sweat the Roval. But I wouldn't be doing it racing for stage points to try and go bumping and banging, you know, 50 to 60 laps into the thing.
Well, I do think that we're going to see a wreck if we actually are coming to, you know, the green white checkered in stage one or stage two, and you have guys like a Cindric and Bell and Bowman trying to get stage points. I think that they'll race good, like good and clean, but I'd be afraid if you get someone up there like, I don't know, someone that hasn't won in a while that wants to go out there. You could get like a, I don't know who it would be, but I think you could see coming to the green white checkered a wreck that takes out drivers. And I don't think that that Chastain and Logano's, they want to be anywhere near that when it comes to stage end, the end of a stage. Now, it's very different if there's only 10 drivers on the lead lap and they're coming to the checkered flag. That would be very different.
Well, and I think that's, you know, a great point because it leads me into one of the next discussion topics I wanted to broach. We talk all the time about some of the primary markets, the outrights, the head-to-heads, and some of the secondary markets that are available for bettors as NASCAR continues to grow in popularity. we'll hear people talk about podium finishes, top fives, top tens. But, you know, I brought up a prominent website, went through some of the top tens. I looked at it and I did a double take. I mean, there feels like there's 35 drivers that are all priced at a pick'em to finish inside the top 10. And then you look at some drivers like Noah Gragson and Daniel Hemric that are 100-1 to win the race. But you know what, Worm? Because we saw that big parlay hit the last time we went to a super speedway in Daytona, books are going to go, we're not going to offer those prices. The best you're getting is plus 350. So this may not be popular with NASCAR bettors, and I know we have a lot of them of varying ability levels that listen to this show. There is no way that anybody out there can justify betting into some of these top 10 prices. And honestly, if they feel they can, they have all the characters they need on Twitter to try and tell me why they're wrong.
Yeah, I mean, everything has to be through the lens of a price, and you have to make sure the price is there. Just because you think that someone might finish in the top 10, you know, if the math doesn't make sense, then you shouldn't make the bet. And I would say there's no value in the top 10s like that I've seen, unless it's the favorites, maybe. I don't know. I haven't even thought about that. Just because I saw the price, I'm like, ugh, I don't want any piece of that. But where I do think there's value is these playoff drivers that need points in stage one matchups. I wouldn't go as far as stage two. I guess if you wanted to, there might be some value. But if you have Alex Bowman or Chris Bell matched up against, you know, someone that's very comfortable in points, well, you know what? It might be an easy winner, because I can tell you right now, Chris Bell and Alex Bowman, they are going after stage points. So you might have a chance to actually pick off some value or an easy winner on those two guys if they're matched up against someone that's very safe. Now, on the flip side, there's guys that have been able to pass 15, 20 cars in the last three or four laps of a race or a stage and go and finish in the top five, and they were hanging back the whole time. All of a sudden, their group just decided to go, and here they were coming with a head of steam, and they're able to pick off a couple, you know, let's say 10 or 12 spots in the last four or five laps, and that could upset some of these matchups that we think are just, you know, shoe-ins, because we all know that in NASCAR, there is no such thing as a winner until that checkered flag or green checkered flag flies.
You want to try that again?
Well, there's a lot of colors and a lot of checkers, and there's a lot of flags.
We go green, white, checkered flag at the end of stage one. We go green, white, checkered flag at the end of stage two. And we go regular, good old-fashioned checkered flag when the race is
over. Okay, perfect. Thank you. Now I've got it.
Every now and again, I got to coach you up a little bit, all right? You may have brought me into this NASCAR betting world, but sometimes I got to remind you of things that I take for granted around these parts. All right, I'm waving the one to go here because I don't want to try and exhaust some of the loyal listeners' time, ears, as they're sitting there with their heads spinning, as we've given them a myriad of reasons not to bet this particular race. Any final words of wisdom you'd like to offer up on Talladega before we get to the final portion of the program?
It's really hard, and I think we've talked about this, you know, on a serious note. You and I want to give good information and be informed for the people that are listening, to give them advice on how to potentially make some money investing in this sport, whether it's, you know, in a head-to-head matchup or it's an outright price or even a top 10. And right now, it's really, really difficult. I think that, you know, as a better of the sport, I can't say that there's a big edge, and that's just me. There's other people out there that might think that there's an edge, and I want to be able to give winners week in and week out, but sometimes you just have to sit back and say, you know what, I can't lose a bet if I don't make one. And like I said, it's a conversation we've had, you know, three or four times throughout the week, is, hey, we want to be honest, but we're also a show that, you know, wants to promote NASCAR gambling. And but sometimes it's just better to be on the sidelines and just be a fan.
Yeah, we want people to enjoy their NASCAR betting experience. And if we can't give actionable information that we feel is profitable at the betting window, then we're not going to do that. And there's nobody who takes some of these losses harder than you and I. Hey, look, I'm honest. Texas beat me up pretty good. Three head-to-head matchups, 0-3, and never really even had a chance to sweat any of those at the end. Did I handicap one poorly? There's no doubt about it. I thought Brad Keselowski was overvalued. The market moved my direction, but it wasn't the right side by any stretch of the imagination. Martin Truex Jr. got out in clean air, wasn't able to get it done. And Alex Bowman, we never saw him actually have a chance to race Austin Dillon. I own my wins, I own my losses. That's pretty much how it goes. But I am going to save you the trouble here, because I know folks are looking for a best bet. I'm going to allow you the privilege to sit on the sidelines for Talladega. Woo-hoo. And we did say it was going to... I mean, I'm going to give you a chance. I don't want you to tarnish your reputation for a race that you don't like to watch at super speedways. I'll take the win or the loss here, and this is for very small stakes, and I would say barely beer money that I would put on this, and you have to tell me if I'm nuts or if you think there's a little bit of opportunity. I'm going to give you two outright drivers. One at 100-1. That's available at some shops, and Corey LaJoie, who this is the one track where I actually think if things break the right way, he may have an opportunity. We saw him be relevant at super speedway racing in the past. 100-1, I think, is a fair price that for a driver that I give slightly more than a 1% chance to win the race. And we highlighted RFK. I think Chris Buescher usually gets undersold for how good he's been on these type of racetracks. So at 20-1, those would be my drivers. I wouldn't bet more than a tenth of a position on either of them, but Worm, we got to give the fans what they want, something to root for when they're going to watch Talladega on Sunday opposite their NFL football.
I'm so glad you did not give an even money bet. I was like, please don't give something even money or even plus 150. Yeah, I think that you hit the nail on the head. You have to take a shot
here. I was going to give you 8 or 9 top 10s at minus -110. Yeah. Because those weren't going to be diminishing returns.
Yeah, I mean, you have to take a bomb here. And that's what's fun, because here's the deal. With 30 to go, this race, they're kind of riding around, and they could just ride around all the way until that white flag. But when that white flag comes out, there's no more rules, and you could see anything happen. You know, you could see 8 or 9 more laps if you haven't seen the white flag, because you could have multiple green white checkers. So anything can happen. You know, if you shop around, you could probably find a better number on Chris Buescher. I'm looking at one right now where he's 30-1. So make sure you shop around and find the best price. But I'm pretty sure that 100-1 on Corey LaJoie is the best price that I've run across. And I really like the LaJoie one. I got to be honest. I was shocked that he's 100-1. So good picks, Todd.
Well, we'll see. They're good picks if they win. If Corey LaJoie wrecks on lap 4, you can get to laugh at me when we reconvene a week from now.
Done.
To talk about life at the Roval. But again, it comes with that caveat. Be responsible. This is a very difficult track to predict. It's more taking a couple of bombs here or there that we think will give you rooting interest when you get involved in Sunday. Remember, you can follow Chris on Twitter at ChrisWormy15. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there. Most importantly, follow the podcast at BetTheBoardPod. Any final words of wisdom, parting shots, things you would like to share with the loyal Stay Green listenership?
Well, I'm just excited that I have no idea what's going to happen in these playoffs. I'm actually excited about that. Like, I'm going to tune into Talladega, and I've never done
what I want to hear. Exactly what I want to hear in a betting podcast. Yes. I got no idea what's going to happen going forward.
Oh, by the way, I know a lot about those last 4 races.
All right. Well, that's what we're looking for. Discretion is the better part of valor. When we have chances to fire, we will be the first ones out there letting you know how to try and get down and move your betting capital into a good position. In the meantime, we can keep it on the sidelines. We can keep a few bucks in play with a bomber or two and hope the 7 and 17 run well for us this Sunday down in Alabama. For Chris Wormy, I'm Todd Furman. Remember, follow the podcast at Bet the Board with wherever your investments take you this weekend at Talladega. Hopefully, we'll see you at the window.